welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
I did.
I had a good Thanksgiving. You want to ask why I had a good Thanksgiving?
Why did you have a good Thanksgiving?
I was, am in Florida.
Yes.
I love Florida.
Yes.
I love sunshine. And I love my family, but I was in Florida, and that's what I really, really love. Yeah, it was all good. So happy day after Thanksgiving to all of you who are part of this podcast, and happy Thanksgiving to Vander Blumen Search Group, because they are great, great ministry partners with us.
Yeah, Vander Blumen Search Group is the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped hundreds of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. You can find out more about Vander Blumen Search Group by visiting westafftochurch.com. And a happy Thanksgiving to all the pastors who are sitting in department stores and where else listening to this on their iPhones while their wives are shopping.
You think that might be the case?
I bet it is the case.
Okay. Well, hello, pastors out there, while your spouses are shopping, and enjoy your time together.
Yes. Yes. Enjoy this podcast while you sit there and wait and watch people at Best Buy fight over 50-inch TVs.
Oh.
So. Because I'm sure it's happening.
I'm all digital, dude.
Yeah.
All digital.
Oh, that's right. You buy everything online? All your Christmas shopping done online?
Every bit of my shopping is done online. In fact, I'm almost to the point where all of my grocery shopping is done online. Yep. I'm waiting for a couple of places to give delivery. I mean, like Amazon's not quite in our area yet, and Shipt, another place, is not. They're in Nashville, but they're not quite at my home. Mm-hmm. But as soon as they get there, everything's going to be delivered.
They're rolling out all that digital online ordering at Publix and Walmart here now. So
yeah,
I just pull up and there's my stuff.
I don't want to pull up.
Yeah,
I love being in my house in my room with no one around. It's my kind of vacation, kind of holiday.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
I'll just hang out at the house by myself.
So we're going to be talking about a sober subject. We're going to be talking about why churches choose to die. And is that fair? I mean, is it fair to say a church chooses to die? I'm reminded of a story in Simple Church that Eric Geiger wrote, and that I put my name on. And Simple Church had the story about a guy who had heart failure, had open heart surgery, and he had to do certain things in terms of lifestyle and in terms of medication, and had stopped doing some things, and he did not, and he died.
Mm-hmm.
And the question then, and I think it's somewhat rhetorical, but it may demand an answer: did he really choose to die? And it's the same story with churches. Are they choosing to die by some of the things they are doing and some of the things that they are not doing? So that's where we'll go.
And it might be just a matter of semantics, that they're maybe not in their minds choosing to die, but they're certainly not choosing to live.
Yeah, that's for sure. In many ways, and we'll begin with that first one, is they're not facing reality. Mm-hmm. They don't know they're sick.
I think they may feel like they're sick, but they don't want to admit it.
Okay, well, that's even another way, a good way of putting it. We gave the story on this originally about a congregation whose attendance was 425 7 years ago, latest count, 185. And they did not think their trends were bad. 7 years, and they had been cut more than a half, and they didn't think the trends were bad.
240 down in 7 years, that's quite a drop.
Yeah, yeah, yes.
But it's also one of those drops where it's hard to recognize a lot of times.
Well, think about it. 240 over 7 years. Think about how incremental that is month by month.
It's only about 35 people a month.
Yeah, and which means...
I mean, it's 35 people a year, which is only 3 people a month.
Yeah, and so you don't recognize
that. That's one family a month.
And that's part of the problem of one of the things I call gradual erosion. If you're there day by day, you may not see it. But boy, do you see the results a few years later.
Well, you mentioned it recently in a podcast that the best descriptor, or the best eye-opener that a pastor can have to see if there is a real issue, especially with worship attendance, is to look at a 10-year worship attendance chart.
Yeah, 10-year. And if they can get that data, it is highly revealing. Even if the pastor was not there the entire 10 years, look at the trend of the church and see if there's anything noticeable. Sometimes that trend can be an eye-opener, and in consultations, you know, I've done some, and I've been doing them off and on for 3 decades now. One of the things that really opens the eyes of leaders is hand them a chart and say, this is where you've been attendance-wise. This is where you're going. It's not all about the numbers, but the numbers are important. Just like a thermometer is not indicative of whether you're the healthiest person or not, what that thermometer says will give you some ideas if something's wrong.
Yeah, the second point here that you make is that the churches are more concerned about greater comfort than the Great Commission.
Yeah, this goes back to the theme of my older book, earlier book, I Am a Church Member.
Available at lifeway.com.
You always say that. I Am a Church Member, the theme of it was, are we country club Christians or are we true body of Christ Christians? A country club Christian is the church is about me, myself, and I. It is a consumer mentality. It is always asking, what is the church doing for me? And anytime I don't get my way, then I am going to be mad because the church is going to meet my needs. I'm paying the dues. In other words, I'm paying pastor salary. Mm-hmm. I'm giving
to
the church.
You work for me, buddy.
You work for me, and therefore you're going to meet my needs. When you have that attitude, if there's a predominant attitude in the church like that, it is already dying.
And I think a lot of times that attitude and that feeling among a great deal in the congregation is a root cause of the first issue. Because if I'm happy and I'm comfortable, then what's the problem?
You know, the most common word of sentence that I will hear in declining churches is this: we are the friendliest church in town.
Mm.
And you know why they're friendly? To each other. They have their cliques. They have their groups. They have their own people, and you try to break into that, and you cannot get into that. It is really, really pervasive in many of our churches.
Well, and this is a question, just random thought connected to that. Is it a helpful question for a prospective pastor or staff member going to a church to ask, you know, what is your church friendly?
Yeah.
Is that a helpful question at all? Because has any church ever said, nope?
I don't know of
It's a legitimate question.
If they're there, they have their own connections, and so they're going to think that they are friendly. One of the better things for a prospective pastor to ask is other people in the community what the reputation of the church is. That may be a little more eye-opening than asking those who are there what the church is like.
Because a lot of times they're blinded by their comfort.
Refusing to face reality, number one.
Yeah, there we go. All right, number three, they are unwilling to accept responsibility.
You ever been around anybody where it's always somebody else's fault? They're always placing the blame. I'm not getting ahead in life because of this.
Should I start naming names?
Yeah. Yeah. No. they have an Eeyore personality, and when anything goes wrong with life, career, whatever, it's the organization's fault. It's somebody else's fault. It's my spouse's fault. It's the world's fault. I cannot get a break. That happens in church life, too. It's the fault of culture. We're living in this dismal, dark culture, and therefore our church will not be reaching people. It's the new churches in town.
Oh, yeah. The mega church. Blame the mega church.
Oh, mega church or new churches.
Oh,
either one. I was recently in a church, I really wasn't in the church. I was talking to the pastor of that church. He said, you know the problem with this community? Too many new churches. I said, well, last time I looked, y'all have gone from like 60% unchurched to 70% unchurched in the community. And the community has about 30,000 people. I think there's plenty of room. Nah, too many churches. All these new churches are the problem. We'd be growing if we didn't have these new churches. Or blame the mega churches because they're absorbing, they're stealing from the other churches. The list goes on and on and on. And if you have excuses, that means that you will not do. You will not be obedient because excuses now become your scapegoat. Do you know what a scapegoat is?
Yes.
Okay. You know the biblical origin?
Yes.
A scapegoat. Okay.
Lay his hands on him, send him out.
Send him out, yeah. And the goat. Okay, yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. Just want to make sure.
Never to return, hopefully. So, number four, they are too busy fighting and criticizing.
Recently wrote a blog post about really one of the key weapons that I would think Satan loves. One of the key weapons that Satan loves is for people to have, our church members, to be infighting, criticizing one another, blaming others, as we said in the previous one, church conflict. Why? It's the conflict itself. Yeah, that's part of it. But if you are using your resources of energy, time, and money to fight each other, you do not have the resources to reach beyond yourself.
You only have a limited amount of resources, and if you're focusing on what's going on in, then you're not focusing on what's going outside.
Yeah, and I don't want to make this a perfect parallel, but I remember one time you and I were traveling, and we were being very productive. And then the next thing I know, all you could talk about was food. And you were getting hungry.
So food is like infighting?
Yeah, it is. Travel? It became a distraction to our productivity because all then you could think about was food. So we had to go get your food, and then you got productive again. It's not a perfect parallel, but I'm just giving
I don't think it's a parallel at all, but okay.
I thought it fit very well, but it's
now I'm hungry.
It's a distraction. You're going to finish this podcast whether you're hungry or not.
Okay. Well, all right. Sounds good. All right, number five, they are confusing non-negotiables with negotiables. Now, you got to explain what these are.
Well, non-negotiables are the essential doctrines, or essential biblical truths. A non-negotiable would be salvation through Christ alone. A non-negotiable would be the total truthfulness of Scripture. A non-negotiable would be the substitutionary atonement of Christ. The doctrines, the truths.
Trinity.
Yeah. All of those, virgin birth, all of those are non-negotiables. Let me give you an example that I gave in the original blog post upon which we're basing this podcast. It was almost 10 years ago, maybe 9.75 years ago, that a couple of men came to my house, and here is what they said. They said, "We think you need to be in our church." They knew I was a new guy in town.
Yeah.
I was the president of Lifeway. And I said, "Why?" And they started telling me what they were against.
I remember you telling me about this church.
Yeah, they were against modern translations of the Scripture, like the
like the one that you were in charge of now.
HESB, which I that reminded them, ESV, NIV. They were against contemporary music,
which you're in charge of now. They didn't really think this through, did they?
They were against coming to church, men, without a tie,
which you are totally against.
I don't like ties, and. I told him, I said, I can't go to a church where the basis of who you are is what you are against.
Mm.
I said, that is a path to death. They're dead.
Yeah. I think you told me this story when we drove by. We were leaving your house going on a trip. I think it was the one we went to Tupelo.
Yeah.
And we were driving by the church, and you said, oh, that church. They came and visited. And you told me the story, and I could not believe that the entire church basically was based on what we're against.
It totally was, and it came out of another church in the Franklin area. Mm. So
shocker there that it was a church split that founded that church.
It was a church split, exactly.
So when we look at this, now let's go back through these five. So we talked about how churches and why churches choose to die. Let's talk, maybe a pastor's in a church like this and he recognizes some of these symptoms. I mean, it sounds like we're talking about autopsy again.
Yeah.
Also available at lifeway.com.
You're bad.
But we gave an example. Number one, they refuse to face reality. The obvious thing is face reality.
And face reality.
We talked about how you can do that with a 10-year attendance pattern. You probably look at giving. There's a lot of things. And also, outside consultants are also an option there.
Our reputation in the community. Ask someone what they think of your church.
Mm.
Find out what is going on there.
Or go to the grocery store and ask your cashier.
Yeah, that happened. You know,
yes, we talked about that.
We
got to check in on him.
Yeah, he was pastor of a church in the Birmingham area, and
hopefully still is.
And he was checking out groceries, and they said, "What do you do?" I'm the new pastor of such and such. I said, "Oh my gosh, I cannot believe you're there. I hate that church. It's terrible."
Yeah,
they're telling that to the pastor. That's one way to find out that you face reality.
Yeah. But if you're in a small town, I don't live in a small town. Neither do you, but. I bet if we asked somebody, I might do that next time I go grocery shopping. Hey, I'm new to town. Tell me about my church, First Baptist Mount Juliet. See what they say.
You're going to lie?
No, I won't lie. I say, hey, what do you think about this church?
Yeah, that's better.
Do you know anything about this?
Yeah.
I won't lie. How about that?
I was just
trying to set up for a good answer, an honest answer.
Yeah, but you need to be honest in your question.
But they may recognize my voice.
Oh, that is so true. That voice is pervasive. You may have to do your falsetto.
But that's a good. That'd be a good challenge for a pastor to do that. Maybe in a town that, and see if people know
exactly. Look at numbers, look at statistics, but also ask people. Yeah. That's one way to face reality. Sometimes even bring in outside consultants. Oxano is a great consulting company that's a part of our organization. Other consultants that can come in, they provide fresh eyes. That's a great way to do it.
All right, number two, I guess get your people focused on the Great Commission. Do some kind of intentional outreach in the church that gets people focused outside rather than inside about their comfort.
That's one way. Another way is to make sure you have a new members class that communicates clearly what it means to be a part of the church.
Mm-hmm.
So get those who are coming in and saying, this is what our church is about, and this is what we expect of those who are part of this church.
Raise the bar of expectation.
There you go. Heard that before, and that's a good one.
Yes. Number three, being unwilling to accept responsibility. Just own it, really.
Yeah, own it. All of us have issues. All of us have things in our personal life, our spiritual life, and in our church life. And ask yourself the question, what can I do to become a better leader in my church, to become a better member in my church? That's the whole theme of, let's get all the books in while we're talking about it. I will.
I'm available at lifeway.com.
So that, you know, that was the premise behind that. Let's look at ourselves and let's do something proactively.
Number four, maybe the toughest to deal with, and, you know, how do you deal with fighting and criticism in the church?
First of all, you are exactly right. It is difficult. Secondly, let's think about the churches that have been successful in combating this.
Okay.
One, they had groups pray about them. I mean, you can get some of your most positive members, prayer warriors, to simply pray about the critics, the attitude in the church. Secondly, you can start practicing the berry bucket theory. And that's not a theory when you start practicing it. The berry bucket simply means the more people who come into the church under the leadership's tenure, the more they tend to take on the personality and the preferences and the priorities of the leadership. So if you stick with it, you know, we did a recent podcast with Michael Fries, mm-hmm. and we talked about pastoral tenure. If the pastor sticks with it over time, the people who are following that pastor's leadership may be of a different ilk and a different type of attitude.
In theory, things will change over time, but it takes persistence.
It takes persistence, and persistence takes time, and that takes longer pastoral tenure, which is always one of our challenges.
Mm-hmm. And now the fifth one, confusing non-negotiables with negotiables. If you've got an issue here, then we've got bigger fish to fry, it seems like.
But it is so common. It is absolutely so common.
In what way? Give me an example.
Okay, think about it. Think about some churches that you have been in. Think about some of the business meetings. And think about...
Oh, okay. So it's not that they're confusing non-negotiables and slacking on those. It's that they're raising the negotiables up to the level of the non-negotiables.
Making those the most important issues in the church. And so if you're arguing about carpet color, if you're arguing about... somebody sitting in a place that you want to sit. You're in my pew or you're in my chair. If you're fussing about the temperature, unless you have a true physical problem that necessitates a different temperature.
Bring a blanket.
Well, I guess if you're cold, that's an option.
Yes, I guess.
You get the point. If you are focusing upon these things that are really minutiae in the scope of the kingdom of God, you are letting those take precedence over the negotiables. This is a harsh statement, Jonathan, but I'll just go on and say it. There are some church members who will be content with people dying and going to hell as opposed to getting their own preferences. They would rather get their church preferences, and that's where they will put their energy, rather than be uncomfortable, share the good news, demonstrate the good news.
Yeah, you shared on a recent podcast about a church that you consulted with here in the Nashville area that refused to put in a screen because that would bring in those type of people.
It was actually worse than that.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to be nice.
But. Yeah, well, no. I mean, it wasn't refusal to put in a screen.
Refusal to do really anything.
They wanted to know if they would ever have to look at music on a screen. I hadn't even mentioned that before. And that became their do or die issue.
Yeah, that's not a hill to die on, guys.
That is a non-negotiable in their eyes. And they died. Yeah. And they died rather quickly at that point.
A couple of questions on this. Have you ever, because this always comes up, and I want to think that it's kind of fictitious, but I'm afraid it's not. Have you ever been at a church or consulted a church that really, really argued over the color of carpet?
No, I cannot say that I remember specifically a church that argued over the color.
I just wonder if it's one of those urban legends. And I'm going to get blasted in the comments. And if so, let me know. But I've never seen it in person. I've heard about it, and it's something people like to talk about.
Okay, let me give you similar examples. I've heard of churches fighting over the color of the paint. Not the color.
Inside or outside?
Inside. Okay. Inside. In the worship center particularly. So I've heard them fuss about that. I have heard them fuss about the decor of small group or Sunday school rooms. So that
is... Oh, just put a piano in there and you'll be fine.
You love those pianos. If it's time to get rid of your old upright piano, bring it to the church.
Stick it in
a Sunday school class. Okay, I cannot recall specifically thinking about a color of the carpet illustration. But they're so close to it, color of the paint on the walls.
Whether or not to have a steeple. That's a big one, I know. I've seen churches fight about that one.
Yeah, yeah. Or the size of the prominence.
Hey, maybe that'd be a good podcast. Goofy things that churches fight about.
We haven't done that?
I don't think so.
We'll do that.
Things like that. That'd be a good podcast or blog post.
Yeah, I'll do a Twitter poll, see what we can find out.
There we go. That's going to be fun. And let's see, what else? The other question I had, and this kind of, we're getting into the Christmas season.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, I guess we are in the Christmas season. Today's the day after Thanksgiving, so.
We are.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, we're there. You should have had your decorations up a month ago.
Man, I've already got a snowman in my living room, so it came the day after Thanksgiving, or the day after Halloween.
All right.
There's a snowman standing next to my TV cabinet in my living room.
Okay.
So, Merry Christmas.
You too, Jonathan.
But Christmas traditions seem like they are some of the strongest traditions in a lot of churches.
Right.
And a lot of times they live on just because we've always done it. I can think of the big Christmas tree thingy, the singing Christmas tree. Is that what those are called?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. We're about to get the emails now.
Well, I'm not saying get rid of them. I'm just saying that these are like seasonal examples. So it doesn't have to be something that's long going or ongoing in the church all year long, but you have these seasonal examples pop up. You have Easter cantatas. You have maybe a 4th of July extravaganza. We've always done this. Festival, things like that.
That becomes
we
the
have
most
to do that. We have to do
we've
that.
Always done this.
And
live camels in the
I
worship
pity
center.
I the music minister. I get to put that video. If you don't know the live camel video, I'll put it in there again. I get to put that. Sorry, Jimmy. But the Christmas season seems to bring back those more traditions than other times of the year.
Right.
And I pity the music minister who comes in and gets rid of the singing Christmas tree.
Oh, wow.
Because, man, that's just going to be rough. He'll be getting coal.
Yes.
In his stocking.
Yes, absolutely.
From quite a few members.
All right,
members.
So now you get it. We're talking about negotiables seemingly having the same import as non-negotiables. So these are how churches die, but I like the fact that we went back and looked at all five of them and saying, what can we do in order for this not to happen?
Well, since we're talking about it, what's your favorite Christmas church tradition?
I still am an aficionado for a Christmas Eve service with candlelight singing Silent Night.
That's a winner.
Yeah. Now here's one thing about it. I was an interim pastor.
Oh, I love this. I love the story.
At First Baptist Mount Washington, where W.A. Criswell had pastored and where I found my daughter-in-law that ended up marrying my son, Sam. And we were doing the candlelight service, and three boys were there. And you know,
how old were they? They were little tykes, huh?
No, they were all high school.
Oh, he was in high school when he...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
In fact, Sam had already graduated from high school.
Oh, that's right, because you had found... Oh.
Yeah, because I found him a wife. I don't think he was a little tyke when I found him a wife. And so I'm holding the candle with the little cardboard piece that keeps it from dripping on you. And we're all holding up our... If you could see me in the podcast, I'm holding up my...
Statue of Liberty.
Like a Statue of Liberty. And we're all holding up. Lights go out. We're singing Silent Night. And then the lights come on. And I say, you may extinguish the flame. And my boys just cracked up. And now every time on Christmas Eve, they'll grab something, a candle, a candlestick, and they'll come up to me and they'll say, Dad, you may extinguish the flame. They thought I was so weird saying that.
Well, that's a great story. I'm going to have to use that now.
So yes.
Whenever we go anywhere and there's candles.
You may extinguish the flame.
Today's podcast has been brought to you by Trinity Evangelical Divinity School. They're a dynamic community of learners who are serious about ministry preparation, biblical studies, theological reflection, and cultural engagement. Their faculty are gifted men and women who minister as much through research and writing as through local church involvement, but their primary ministry is teaching and caring for students. You can find out more about Trinity Evangelical Divinity School at divinity.tiu.edu. That's going to do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
One word about our sponsor, Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, and led by David Dockery, the president there. They're producing the kind of students that are going into these churches that I think are going to make a huge difference.
Yeah.
And these churches that are struggling, I think I'm so grateful for Trinity and the type of ministry and the type of theological education they have. They're going to move forward.
Thanks for joining us today for Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and give us a rating and review over there, and visit us online at tomrainer.com.